Welcome to Living on Blockchain. Today we'll be interviewing Borja. He is from Argentina and he's transforming the crypto landscape there. So let's deep dive right in.
Hi Borja, it's so good to have you here. How are you doing today?
Hey Tarusha, well, thank you for having me here. And well, today I'm very well. I'm here in Barcelona, just reading the news about Facebook yesterday in the Senate and everything. So I mean, it's pretty exciting times.
Right. We live in pretty crazy times, I would call them, but we would touch upon that a little later. Good, let's start with, you can tell us a little about yourself and how you got involved in crypto and the space.
Sure. So, I'm Borja again. I'm Argentinian. I'm an Argentinian boy, Spanish person.
Right.
I'm 22 years old. I'm the youngest of my team, of my partners.
Wow.
And, I met Bitcoin. I'm a centennial generation seed, and I met Bitcoin when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
In 2011, a friend of mine, we used to play video games, so we had pretty good computers.
Right.
He came, my friend Alfredo, he came and he said, hey, check this out. And he showed me his mining software working. Bitcoin was like $20.
Okay.
And he had like $5. So like 25% of a Bitcoin.
Right.
And I was like completely blown away by the fact that we could put the machines we used to play video games
right.
to work and get
yeah.
money. And that's literally how I got into Bitcoin. And then I just grew up. I just grew up with it, even though like didn't give it much attention for 2-3 years. It's something that has always been in my mind. And like recently, I saw a report that said that Generation Z doesn't really like cryptocurrencies, and I can for sure tell you that that is not correct. I mean, like,
yeah.
I have so many friends my age and younger, or people I know as well, that
right.
just know everything about Bitcoin. They don't know much about crypto, but they do know about Bitcoin. They like Bitcoin, and many of them have. So
right.
It's I definitely feel that my generation is will be super involved if they are not already into the growth of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that too. I actually don't believe in that research either. I think the coming generation and the young people, you are younger than me actually, and you've been around in this space for some time. I thought that I was one of the young people in crypto. Clearly, I'm wrong. So, I think we are way much more aware and we want to sort of help the movement of blockchain to further our growth. And, the youth is so big about freedom. And I think blockchain is all about that.
100%. Look, I'll just tell you an example. Last week, I was in Vienna at a friend's house. And we were working from there. And he's got a little brother of 14 years old.
Right.
He was the one who showed Bitcoin to my 25-year-old friend.
Right.
And he has like friends his age that are already either trading, investing in Bitcoin, or just hodling Bitcoin.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, again, I don't feel that report was accurate at all. And at least myself being a Generation C and Centennial, looking
yeah.
at the people from my generation and younger, they will definitely play a huge role. And big parts of the change we're expecting, like, from the regulatory standpoint of view and from the institutional point of view, it'll all come with the new generations, right? I mean, because right now there are like dinosaurs in power and dinosaurs do not like Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, it is actually the new generation which is going to bring about the change. It is the new generation that understands the technology well as well. As you said that, you know, your friend's 14-year-old brother, he knew more. So that just goes on to say a lot.
Exactly. And like tell a 14-year-old kid that everything is instant right now and also with cryptocurrencies. Tell him to pay like a friend in another part of the world. Just send money, a friend of his from like video games or whatever. Tell him
yeah.
to do a bank transfer. And not only that, but also tell him that the bank transfer will delay like some days.
Right.
He will
yeah.
be like, what? What is that?
I'm not waiting for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is the age of instant gratification, and I think blockchain brings that as well. So it is about a lot about freedom of choice and freedom of doing things a certain way that you want them to. We've had it with banks telling us how to spend our money.
100%. I couldn't agree more with that.
Oh, excellent. So tell me a little bit more about the current project that you're working on.
Yeah, so I'm currently working on Lucus. With three co-founders.
Okay.
We have Lorenzo Valente, he's a mechanical engineer.
Okay.
It's myself, and we have a great technical team of Peter Korolev that comes from Bankex, and Alex Lebed that comes from Stable Unit.
Mm.
So essentially what we're doing is we're building a bridge between fiat and cryptocurrencies, right now focusing on Latin America. So as you know, like for example, in Argentina last year, we had 110% devaluation,
right.
50% inflation.
Yeah.
Same thing, but exponentially worse in Venezuela. And usually like this pattern of weak economies, weak currencies repeats all over emerging markets and Latin America, of course.
Right.
So essentially what we're doing is we want to, and we are executing on that. We're taking crypto to every person in these regions. I mean, many people criticize Bitcoin as a volatile currency, but Bitcoin is less volatile than the Argentine peso.
Yeah,
and performed better than the Argentine peso too. So like if last year, which was one of the worst years for Bitcoin, instead of having Bitcoin, Argentine pesos, you had Bitcoin, your investment would have been better, or your assets would have performed better than the Argentine peso. So we already see how Bitcoin is much, much better than a lot of currencies, national currencies.
Right, it's so much better than, you know, so many national currencies.
I mean, like it has, even though in the current state, which is, I agree that it's volatile and unstable.
Yeah.
But even in this state, it's already better than many of the current systems we have. So we want to make sure that we provide this new vehicle of and way of living, because like it's not only about having a different currency, it's about having financial freedom, more privacy. It's about being able to pay whoever you want, wherever he is, at any time you want, no boundaries, no limits. So we want to take this thing called Bitcoin that is really a new lifestyle and that provides new quality life to every single person that has been suffering their own national currencies for years and years. Because like, if you're from any of these countries, Latin America, emerging markets, like you suffer your country. It's insane, but you really suffer your country. So we see that this currency called Bitcoin is definitely something that will solve many people's problems, even with the problems that it has today. Bitcoin, it still solves so many pains and so many needs from people from these countries. But yeah, what we're doing is that right now we have spent all our like early stage paying lawyers and accountants and more lawyers and more accountants to get the legal structure right and to get like to make a corporate structure that really allows us what we want to do, that is really bank the unbanked and take financial services to everyone. Because we also have to remember that Bitcoin is the first step to decentralized finance. So like people will already, I mean, people would not need any banks at all. And that's what we want to do. We want to really give financial freedom to people. And that's what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's wonderful. I think, you know, all of us in the blockchain community, we are somehow, you know, we are trying to push the cause for, you know, banking the unbanked. And it's wonderful that you guys are doing it in Argentina. So what is the policy like? What is the law like in Argentina regarding, you know, crypto or blockchain projects?
Well, that's a good question. The policy is like, it's really open around here, as long as you are compliant and as long as you do the things that you have to do with the law, things are okay. Let's see, just to give some form of context, Argentina is a country that is constantly in crisis.
Right.
And when your country is constantly in crisis, you just need solutions. You don't care what solution you bring.
Right.
You just care about bringing a solution.
Right.
So when when companies like these start thriving in these countries and they start doing well and they pay taxes and they contribute to the economy, like really the governments don't care it's Bitcoin or it's whatever. They just care that there is a company that is performing well and it's like being compliant with the law and with the taxes and with everything. So like why cut that progress, right? So essentially they are very helpful. They are very good. It's easy to work with them. And it's also good to have direct relationship with the regulatory entities. However, it is also something as it's completely unregulated. And like I tell investors in our pipeline and just partners and everything, like we don't have licenses because licenses do not exist.
Okay.
What we have is a great puzzle because like to get, and this goes between quotation marks, licenses, which again do not exist. Instead of doing that, you just need very good lawyers and very good accountants that help you to register your company under the right categories, under the right specifications that will allow your business to do to perform certain actions, corporate actions, and to be liable to certain taxes as well. Because in the end, this is a game of lawyers and accountants, and then it all comes to execution. But if you don't have like the correct corporate structure, it's gonna be super hard. And the problem here is again, as it's unregulated, it's really complicated to know what is going to happen once regulations come.
Right.
So we have some plans, contingency plans for that. We want to make sure that whenever regulations come, we want to be one of the companies that makes through that.
Right. Okay. So that's excellent. So do you, right now you're saying because there is no policy, there are no licenses. So it basically comes down to the corporate structure of the company.
Completely. I mean, it's completely about that. It's really, there is no straightforward to doing this. It's more like a puzzle and a riddle.
Right.
And yeah, definitely it all comes to a game of who's got the best accountants and lawyers to really make things work. And and that's why we have been spending so many resources on that as well. And then we just have a really strong corporate responsibility area. I mean, we donate 5% of all the profits we make into social and environmental impact.
I was just checking your website and I was so impressed by just the landing page and you know how you sort of donate 5%. I think that is wonderful. We'll talk more about that as well. I totally want to cover that.
So essentially we were not born because we wanted to make a crypto company. We were born because we understand that we are in the verge of creating completely new financial systems for everyone.
Right.
So we really understand these times, these years, as a breaking point of how the world is going to be built towards the future. So coming from a region where everything is inequality is so big and many times things are so unfair, and our team comes from very lucky families and everything, but we are deeply moved by how, again, inequality is around here. So we really wanted to embrace this breaking point at which we stand from a technological and social point of view to make a real change and to make something different. So when we started this, we didn't say, let's do a crypto exchange or brokerage. We just said, let's build a new economy. And we believe that problems in the future will need to be solved by everyone. It's not enough with only governments taking care of the environment and social problems. It's not enough. And the proof of that is that our current state. And also we see how private companies are gaining so much power. That I mean, it's so hard. And we believe it's impossible for governments to be the only ones who address, again, social and environmental problems. So we said, why not creating the first company that has at the core of its business to create social and environmental impact and change? And settle this as the future of the economy, as the future where everyone is involved in making a change. We all make money, of course. Right. If you don't make money, like you'll shut down the business.
Yeah, you can't survive.
Exactly, but why not make money and make impact? And why not make it in a way so that as you, the more you grow, the more impact you make. I mean, the impact you make is directly related and it's directly pegged and tied to our growth. Right. So the more we grow, the more the societies and local communities will benefit. So it's all about that. We really wanted to create a different future, a future where companies are deeply involved with communities. And we saw really no better way than saying, you know what, we'll just give transparency to what we do and we'll donate 5% of all the money that, of all the profits we do. Yeah. And it's under development, but it's going to be truly open source and open for the people. It's the users who will choose where these funds are destined to, because in the end, we want to give the power to the customers. And if you as a customer are worried about the forests in your local community, then you can just open a pool to support the forest in your community. And then anyone will be able to choose that cause as a destination for 5% of our profits. So it all comes wherever we make the profits, we reinvest in that place. So as a user, you will only be able to make us donate 5% of what we make into initiatives in your country.
Okay.
And the second concept that this brings is complete transparency, because if you buy, let's say, one Bitcoin,
right,
and we tell you that we just donated $5 to whatever cost you chose,
right,
that means that we made $100 of profit on the Bitcoin you bought.
Right.
So that means that you know exactly how our business model works.
Right.
And that means, again, that if you see that our price of Bitcoin, let's say, in our market is $100 or $1,000, let's say, and we made $100 in profit because we donated $5, which is 5%,
right,
then you can say, okay, these guys are, if the Bitcoin is for $1,000 and they are earning $100, they are putting a markup of like a little bit above of 10%.
Right.
So then people will say, okay, these guys are making $100 per Bitcoin with Bitcoin at $1,000, and they are donating $5. Okay, so what about all the exchanges and markets that have Bitcoin above 1,000?
Right.
And that they are keeping all the money for themselves.
I mean,
they are really, 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 really exploiting the prices, and we're paying really expensive prices. And at the same time, they will be able to say, okay, businesses that have Bitcoin below 1,000, they have very good prices. Because we definitely have like very good prices. So our competition comes down to who provides the best intrinsic value to our customers. I mean, we really believe that everybody in the market, almost everybody, is just fighting for superficial features. Like, I have like 1 billion orders processing and matching engine. But my matching engine has like 15 layers of whatever.
Mm.
And we believe that anybody can have the same tech. Like, come on, if I just get hire your engineers, I'll tell them to make the same exchange or engine you have. So we believe that in this coming future, it won't be about tech, because everybody can achieve the same tech. Talent is all over the place.
Yeah.
It'll come down to who provides the best intrinsic value, who gives the most to the customers and to society. So not only we donate, but we're also beginning a program where we'll be paying with cashbacks to people. So we want to make sure that people have a social and economic incentives to operate with us, and not just like, oh yeah, like these guys have a super matching engine, which I don't even notice if it's working or not, you know, like.
Right. Yeah. No, so I understand what you're saying. There are a lot of vanity, you know, metrics here, and people say a lot of big numbers to confound users. But ultimately, it can be, you know, it comes down to what is the kind of value that you're bringing to the table. What are you giving back to the community? And I think it's wonderful that you're doing that with Lucas. So what is, you know, people's outlook in Argentina towards crypto and blockchain in general?
So I'll tell you the how crypto began in Argentina. So so I can give you like a good context and a good idea of how everything started.
Sure.
So basically, 5 years ago, people, 6 years ago, people weren't allowed to buy foreign currency.
Okay, all right.
So you were in Argentina, and you were not able, not allowed to buy U.S. dollars.
Okay.
So then something again called Bitcoin, which was rated at a USD price, because like we all talk about Bitcoin at how much per dollar.
Right.
How much dollars per Bitcoin?
Yeah.
So Bitcoin became like the main gateway to actually buy U.S. dollars in Argentina.
Okay.
So a lot of people were buying U.S. dollars through Bitcoin, and that's really how it began, how it became big.
Right.
So just thinking about that context, we can understand like how people. In these regions, in these countries where sometimes like freedom is not the most big thing, let's say, sometimes, not always,
right.
Or where your country's set barriers or blockades or just obstacles for the population,
yeah.
Then people understood how crypto and blockchain can become a solution for this.
Right.
And another example is you have so many people living in Argentina sending money abroad to Venezuela, Colombia, Peru, not with Western Union, not with MoneyGram, not with banks, but with Bitcoin.
Right.
So it's become very big
in Argentina.
Sorry?
It's become very big in Argentina because of the kind of policies that were in place. So in terms of remittances, etc., my understanding is that it has become because people want to sort of have the freedom to buy foreign currencies, and they're doing that via Bitcoin.
Exactly. I mean, like, it comes to what we talked about a little bit before. People in these places, they don't care about the solution. They
right.
just care that there is a solution.
Right.
Maybe cryptocurrencies and blockchain are a solution for many of the problems we have. That's why, like, it's something that I love to say, like, I believe that if I have to divide the world in two, like North and South Hemisphere, like developed and undeveloped countries, let's say, developed countries have all the tech.
Right.
100% agreed. But we have the use case.
Right, right. Yeah. The use cases are happening. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The use cases are happening, in all of these areas where Bitcoin can actually, you feel the power of the technology because it's actually helping you solve a very real problem, which is an everyday problem.
100%. Like in Venezuela, you can go have dinner to a restaurant and you can pay like in Litecoin or Bitcoin.
Right, right. It's wonderful to say that, and in some parts of the world where people are not able to understand crypto so much and they have a very bleak outlook towards it, it's so wonderful and heartwarming to see these kind of, visuals and articles that, you can actually go out and then have dinner and pay in Litecoin. That's why there is cryptocurrency, I think.
100%. The use case is so strong because if you look at Bitcoin as a currency with the monetary policy and everything, Bitcoin is already better than our currencies. So it's strong in that use case. As a currency, it's already stronger than ours. If you look at sending money abroad and international transfers, that people use this here a lot because they send money to their families back home because many of them have poor families and so on. Like, that's right. Another use case that works much better than the normal system. If you look at corruption and transparency, then blockchain is another use case. And literally everything about the technology is a use case down here. And that's why it's so beautiful and so magic.
This is wonderful to hear that, that people are welcoming towards this new technology and they're not fearful of it and they're actually using it. This is absolutely wonderful. So I was checking your bio and I saw that you've graduated from Draper University. How was your experience in that particular program? I think you were in the Draper program, right?
Yeah. So the Draper program is an excellent program. I was happily selected as an ambassador for them as well. It's a great time. It's 5 weeks where you take a deep dive into all of the emerging and deep technologies around the world, and a lot of cryptocurrencies and blockchain as well, because of course Tim Draper is like one of the Bitcoin evangelists out there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that he made he wanted to make sure that we also got a lot of crypto. We spent a lot of time with Tim. Actually, we went camping with him, had a lot of sessions with him, received feedback from him about our companies and so on. And yeah, overall, it was so magic meeting just people from. It was 65 people from 26 different countries. So
wow.
You can imagine the diversity. People from South America, North America, Europe, Asia, Africa, Middle East. It was really, really good, and definitely super recommended for anyone to go. And yeah, it's a really good place just to take a deep dive into the Silicon Valley, knowing just having great entrepreneurs that have exited their businesses, successful people that have like built very large companies, to take a look at their experiences, and they. I think that all of them speak directly from the heart, and like just let people know about what's the difficulties they will face. Because I mean, being an entrepreneur, you need to be insane to be an entrepreneur. Like being an entrepreneur, and I mean like you're an entrepreneur yourself. It's like the worst thing. I mean, it's the worst thing ever, and the best thing ever. But sometimes it's like, come on, man.
Well, yeah.
it's so crazy. Like the other day, it's such a roller coaster. The other day, we had two calls with two providers.
Right.
One of our providers, which was like looked everything that was so good, so great. Their company was like, for what they had told us the previous week on the previous call, they were like everything that we needed. And then we had these guys. That we didn't really feel comfortable. We in the first call we thought that they were not really good and so on. And
we have the
follow-up call. The one that turned out to be amazing and everything was actually super nuts. He like contradicted everything of what he said the previous week. Like all of what he painted was not real.
Yeah.
And the other guys, which we didn't give like we wouldn't bet $1 for it. They actually said, okay, we want to put money in your company as well.
So we
were like, oh man, this is such a classic entrepreneurial day. Like,
there's so many ups and downs in a day, like emotional upheaval, and then, you know, you're doing fine.
I mean, how crazy can it get? It's like, you are super, you get the best news ever, and then at the same time, you're like getting the worst news ever. But it's also, it's refreshing. I mean, our team is super resilient and super like, we embrace chaos, because we come from countries that live in chaos. So for us, being in a roller coaster is like where we were born and raised. But it's
I love
it's
that.
Very, I mean, like imagine you live in a country where every year you have like 30% inflation, devaluation. I mean, it's just completely insane.
It is insane,
I mean, I cannot plan for tomorrow, because I don't know if you make it past today. That's how you live in South America. But anyways, it's always really good to like listen to really top-notch people in the Silicon Valley. I mean, that maybe you believe that they are gods, or out of like, they came out of a UFO.
Right.
See that they are just human beings, just like you, and with just resilience, hard work, and being as prudent and trying to make the best decisions based on experience as possible.
Right.
Anything is possible. So,
I think entrepreneurs everywhere have a very similar kind of journey. They're usually, you know, a mad bunch who are really trying to bet against all odds. And there's a lot of emotional upheaval. But ultimately, what it comes down to is a lot of smart work and a perseverance. Ultimately, as you said, you know, it's resilience on the part of those entrepreneurs who've made it big. And then when you sort of connect, it somehow makes your struggle feel a little easier. There is a sense of camaraderie, right? That, you know, you, there is a community who goes through the exact same thing as you are, and there is support there.
100%. I mean, 100%. And it's very important. Like this advice for every person that wants to be an entrepreneur. If you're crazy enough, like it's the best. I mean, and just yesterday we were talking about it with Lorenzo, my co-founder, Lorenzo Valente. We were. This is like the first business he has built.
Right.
And I was asking him how he felt and everything. We were talking about how insane it is to, like, as an entrepreneur, you create value out of thin air, because, like, if you start making that money, creating that value, it's because nobody else was doing it.
Right.
So it's it's really so crazy how you are feeling a hole where there was nothing, and you're really creating value, and you see money, and you see growth, and you see new people coming in, and it's like completely insane and satisfying to, like, see your own baby grow. But
ready,
again, you need to be ready to like for chaos and a combat zone and a war zone, because being an entrepreneur is
it's being perpetually in the war zone.
I mean, you need every day. I mean, there's nothing but problems, and you need to be the person who brings only solutions. And that's why, I mean, you will agree with me. I mean, at least we look for people that they just bring solutions. Like, you ever have as a startup, if you ever have somebody that brings problems, you already have like a rain of problems, like a cascade of problems. So it's so important to bring problem solvers, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's really very fulfilling as well. You've also been a part of G20 Young Entrepreneur Alliance. So what exactly is the motivation behind that particular group and alliance? What did you learn?
So the G20 YEA is it's a great group. It's a group of young individuals that are selected from the commerce chambers and production chambers from each of the countries.
Right.
And, it's usually high talented and high skilled young individuals and professionals that have considerable companies.
Right.
And the G20 YEA, it's like it's 3 days where you have all these great entrepreneurs and business young business people. Where you just connect to make more business. I mean, it's such a great scene to really make very good connections, to expand businesses, expand frontiers. And in the end, it's like the G20, where you have countries that get together to do business and to do partnerships and so on. Well,
yeah.
It's exactly the same thing, but for a younger target, for a younger segment of skilled entrepreneurs and business people that are ready to go to those 3 days wherever the G20 is, and just develop commercial relationships, professional relationships, and also friendships. I mean, the G20 YEA group is a great group. I keep in touch personally with so many people of the committees, and it's such a helpful network, because it's friendship oriented, but it's also super business oriented.
Yeah.
It's super useful and fun, and work-wise, super, how can I say? It's like it gives, when you seed and then you harvest, it gives a lot of fruits, we say in Spanish. I don't know how you say it in English.
Okay, so basically it's a great network to be a part of, is what I can understand. And then, you know, once you synergize with the other members, there is obviously, you know, you can sort of help leverage each other's network, right?
Exactly. It's about making it's about making business friends, for sure. And you have very talented people, so it's again, I would agree on what you say. It's a very good place to network and find partners to make your business grow.
Excellent. So are you, do you have any plans to do an ICO or an IEO for Lucas?
We don't have any plans for that in the moment. We have, and this is not an investment advice, but we have the thoughts, or as to our analysis, we believe that there will be a major like clearing of many of the tokens and currencies out there. And,
right.
We believe that very few will be standing in the next short to mid-term.
Right.
We just want to give our business traditional growth while using not traditional and innovative approaches to the market. But yeah, definitely ICO or IEO is not on our current plans.
Okay.
We don't dismiss having tokens, but we would not sell them. If we have any tokens at all, it's just to reward people. And we have designed some mechanisms, but we're still not sure that we want to create new value, let's say. We're considering to use other vehicles, such as decentralized stable coins like DAI, or just other vehicles to right. reward people, rather than creating a new asset in the market. When we really think that a major breakdown of
currencies
will come.
Yeah, it's already.
We don't believe that it's a good timing to make an ICO or IEO right now.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, never say never. So what is, perhaps how do you see the ecosystem growing in the next 5 years or so? Like, what do you have in your product lineup?
So in the next 5 years, you can expect Lucus to be all over Latin America and Africa.
Okay.
We are specifically focusing on the emerging markets. We really think that everybody is competing for Europe, North America, Asia. And again, people in those countries do not need crypto. Like, no crypto company is solving any problem whatsoever in those regions. Mm-hmm. So we want to, as entrepreneurs, that we consider ourselves problem solvers, we actually want to solve a problem. And we know that by doing a crypto company, we'll be solving problems in the Southern Hemisphere and places like in the emerging markets, to put a better name, like Africa and Latin and South America especially. So in 5 years, you can expect Lucus to be the biggest company in those markets. We're super confident on that. You can expect Lucus to be a super decentralized and a customer-oriented company. Right now, we're deploying a non-custodial fiat-to-crypto wallet with tokenized fiat funds. That is a product that is going to be released really soon. So you can think about that, for example, as an ABRA, but with decentralized fiat. So essentially what we're doing is whenever somebody sends us funds to our bank account, let's say that you send $100 because you want to fund your account, we will receive those $100, we will tokenize them and send it to them. So even though we still have the custody of those funds, which is not 100% non-custodial, that part is still custodial, at least we give free movement of the assets to the users. So if you're in any custodial solution, whenever they want, they can ban your account, they can freeze your funds, whatever.
Right.
We give complete control to the users, and we literally do not know what is going on with those tokenized fiat funds. The only thing we worry on and work on is cash in and cash out. So on the on and off ramps, that's all we do.
Okay.
And this product is going to be launched really soon. It will allow people to send both crypto and fiat funds through WhatsApp and Telegram.
Okay, wonderful.
So that is something interesting for the people here in Latin America. They will be able to send people money to their friends, families, and whatever, wherever they are at any time, just through WhatsApp or Telegram, which it's the people use a lot here. We're bringing that payments product lineup as well. And just products, then again, solve the problem. Solve the problem that people have here, that is inflation, devaluation, cost, very costly remittances, and so on. So what you can expect from us is all products that are the opposite. Like access to DeFi, access to good performing crypto financial products, decentralized and non-custodial solutions, wallets, etc., payments and remittances through social media, all these kind of products that are exactly the opposite. I mean, they are the painkillers of the pains that people have.
Right.
Hopefully everyone in Africa, instead of using M-Pesa, will be using us. And in Latin America, as nobody uses M-Pesa, hopefully they will be using us too.
Excellent. That's such a wonderful vision. So basically your product is a painkiller rather than a vitamin, is what I understand. And, you know, painkillers tend to always really go big. So excellent. So what are your views on Libra, like the Facebook's token that it's coming out with? And we had initially spoken about it in the intro. What are your thoughts about it? And what do you think? Where is it going to go? Do you think it deserves the kind of flack that it is receiving on, you know, social media?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that we are like in the 21st century version of the French Revolution. I'll tell you why. In the French Revolution, what happened is that the governments were the nobles.
Right.
And then you had the people that were making a lot of money. I don't know how you call it in English, but in Spanish it's the burgueses. I don't know how you say that in English.
Right.
But it was basically the emerging class of...
Yeah, the middle class, they were...
Yeah, all the merchants that were started to make a lot of money.
Right.
And they said, many of us have more money than many of these nobles that are bankrupt.
Right.
Why can't we have more power? We should have more power.
Right.
What happened back then was that they killed all the nobles and everything, and they took over the power and made the French Revolution with equality, freedom,
liberty,
and liberty.
Yeah.
So what is happening now, from what I understand, is something very similar, where you have big corporations that are making a bunch of money. And just to give an example, Walmart has a revenue of $500 billion a year.
Right.
And the Argentine government as a whole has a revenue of $120 billion a year.
Right.
So Walmart's economy is 4.5 times bigger than Argentina's government economy.
Right. Yeah.
So you can already see how, taking the analogy, you have this emerging class, the corporations, which already have more financial power than the nobles, the governments in this case. So from my understanding, what we're seeing is that all the corporations are now saying, like, why don't we have more power if we have more money?
Absolutely.
So the only difference is that I'm pretty sure they won't kill anyone or anything like
that. This won't be a bloody revolution.
Yeah, this won't be a bloody, I mean, at least from the physical point of view, because governments will suffer a lot. But I mean, it's the own problem that they created. I mean, like, it's the problem of capitalism is like the power starts going to where the money is. And if the money is not in the hands of the government, well, governments, I'm sorry to tell you, but you're losing the power.
Yeah.
So having said that, I really think that is happening. Corporations are already seeing that they can or should have more power. And that's why, like, the Libra project is something, it's probably the biggest financial project ever in history to have been proposed. Because we are literally talking about a global currency that won't be supported or run by governments, but that will be run by the biggest companies in the world that have access and maybe like 90% penetration rate at every country. So, and from my personal point of view, and to be honest, and as a pure Bitcoiner and a fan of cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, I'm like, my friends bother with me that I'm a Bitcoin. nothing could have been better for the industry than Libra project. I mean, yeah. I feel that the Libra project will bring in 2 billion users that will have access to Bitcoin one click away, or one tap away. And that is so big, that is so huge. For the first time, all the people that do not know about wallets, about cryptos, about everything, Facebook will be doing the education for all of us, the vitalization for all of us and so on, about cryptos and wallets and private keys and this and that. They will be doing that for all of us. So the benefits of that will be seen by the industry as a whole. So like that's 2 billion people that we do not need to educate already. That's 2 billion people that Facebook will spend the money educating them. And then we will be the ones offering their services, because like for you in your market, everyone will buy Libra in Facebook with such an easy UX. And when they want to trade, they say, okay, now I have crypto. Maybe I can trade it for another and start investing.
Right.
This crazy world where anybody can invest. And they just go to your exchange in your region.
Right.
And like, they began trading in maybe like 10 minutes. Whereas today, to like begin the experience, it's so hard. And if you don't find the right company, and I mean, it's such a hassle. And I mean, Facebook will make cryptocurrencies not a hassle. And that's why I see a lot of people do not like Facebook. They say like it'll gain too much power, which yes, they will gain a lot of power. I'm definitely agreeing with that.
Right.
But I think as a person about my industry, and we bring decentralization, and the worst case scenario is we have 2 billion new users. So I couldn't be sad with that.
I think that, you know, a lot of flack that Libra is facing is because of certain things in their white paper that makes it look a little less than decentralized, and B, it is primarily because, you know, people have an issue with Facebook in general, and that is why, with the privacy aspect in mind, they are criticizing Libra as well. But as you said, it would be great for mass adoption and for educating people, because there is a learning curve involved. Because it's actually, there is no learning curve, but because there is so much unorganized information when you start, you know, searching for crypto, or if you want to start off on this path, then, you know, Facebook, as you said, would be educating all these people at their expense, and that means more users for us.
Yeah, I mean, I agree so much. And yeah, I think that, again, the key point about Libra is that when I see big companies that have spent a lot of money in UX, UI, customer education and everything, I always say like, thank you, because then it all comes to like, see, I mean, I don't believe in reinventing, being the one that reinvents the wheel, but I believe in like, always innovating, but making sure that you take things from people or companies that were successful before. And definitely Facebook will be like the explorer with the machete in the front line that will be educating 2 billion users at a time. I completely love and love companies that are doing huge efforts and
in furthering this movement, right? So I think, as you said, that because we are about constantly innovating, we should learn from other people's mistakes, or try to at least reap the benefits that they've left behind for us, rather than building the wheel from scratch. You know, we can make our own mistakes and learn from them. So it's good that we want to reap the rewards from the companies in the same space, because ultimately we are all in this together, because we have to further the movement of blockchain and crypto to actually solve real problems. And that can only be done once we sort of come together and we synergize.
100%. And like, I mean, let's, my bet for the future, and like, if then I'm not correct, like, I would be super surprised, because I'm super confident on this one. I can 100% state that after the Libra project begins and people start, and Libra starts onboarding users, all the industry as a whole will see growth in their, every company in this industry will see growth. I'm like 100% sure about that.
Excellent. So, you know, more to that and here's to that. And I hope the same. What is your vision for, you know, the next year in terms of crypto, in terms of the growth in this space? How do you envision it?
I think that in the next year, we're going to have a great tech improvements. It was pretty surprising to see the Lightning Network channel volume to go down when Bitcoin started going up.
Right.
But I still, I mean, there's a lot of people working on privacy, zero knowledge snarks, and so on. And as a person that I really like the concept about crypto, privacy, and freedom, I think that there are very good tech research and improvements over the Ethereum network, over the Bitcoin network. Then we have Rootstock that is deploying or is giving smart contracts to Bitcoin. I see that the industry is growing. People, as we have been through a bear market, I saw a lot of entrepreneurs focusing on real use cases as well, and not like in the 2017, which was basically like tokenized and blockchainized everything, which made really no sense. Because blockchain is not the best for everything. So like,
so I really see, what blockchain would be useful for, because this technology in its infancy, then there are a lot of projects that actually just add blockchain just for the heck of it, right? To their white paper or about their project without realizing that perhaps it might not be the best fit just because it's the hot, word. And hot, in this space, it doesn't mean that, you are going to add it to your project unless it's bringing some value. It is completely, useless.
100%. And that was something in 2017, like literally people were blockchainizing everything and it made no sense whatsoever. But now I see that with this, like the past year with the bear market and like, people becoming more skeptical about crypto, I saw that the industry as a whole started to focus a lot more on use cases that made sense, that actually worked, that were worth working on from the crypto point of view with game theory and protocol mechanism designs and so on. And from the blockchain aspects, giving transparency, traceability and so on as well. And then you have like these major companies that are improving I love the supply chain scene with big players like Walmart, Intuit. I know that in Asia, big players are jumping into it. And it's a matter of time. Like the good thing is that right now, Bitcoin, blockchain is on everybody's mind, especially these days. It's super exciting. I think that this is a groundbreaking year. Next year we have the halving, so like this is like the new starting point. So I think that people in the blockchain and crypto industry will see very good sustained sustainable growth as well. So I see a really good year coming.
I think it's about how the strong and would survive, the strong and the relevant will survive, and that is what is so wonderful about correction. And that is what I think I completely agree that in the coming year these are very exciting times. In the coming year it's just going to get better and better. So this brings me to my penultimate question. Who are the thought leaders that you enjoy following in this industry?
I didn't listen to the last part.
I was saying, who are the thought leaders that you, really follow in this industry, in the blockchain space, who you sort of, who you like reading their tweets, whose blogs you follow? Who are the thought leaders that you, or influencers that you follow in this space?
Okay, so of course that Pomp, Antonio Pompliano, course that I follow him. I think that almost everyone will say that they are his number one fan. So I'm part of the number one fans of Pompliano too.
Yeah.
then I really like following Diego Gutierrez Aldivar from Rootstock. Of course, Vitalik Buterin to see what is going through his mind. Gabriel Kurman. Those are like probably my favorite people. I sometimes find interesting Barry Silbert opinions. I mean, not sometimes. I usually find them interesting. And then I love reading a lot about the critic point of view. I love the Bitfinext Twitter account, which talks all day long about crypto as a scam.
I
like reading that as well, just to see what's the other side of the street. And then, like those are probably my most favorite ones. Then I'm a really big fan of the Argentine ecosystem, so I follow almost all of them as well. I feel like Argentina has, from the infrastructure point of view, they have a huge people, huge experts. Well, right now, Manu Arauz from Zeppelin announced that he was leaving Zeppelin, which was like pretty sad because I think that he has his contribution to the Ethereum network and community is very, very relevant with the open Zeppelin and so many things that they did at Zeppelin for Ethereum. But yeah, they are my most favorite ones. But for sure, I mean, like the number one is Anthony Pompliano. Like he's just so, so fun to read. And he's, I mean, he's like such an all-in person. And well, of course, Tim Draper, our friend Tim, to whom I say hi, I'll send him the link to this podcast. I mean, he's a visionary. He really saw Bitcoin when Bitcoin was quotation marks. Yeah, when Bitcoin was nothing, let's say, or was super small.
Absolutely.
The guy bought 30,000 Bitcoins. How much of a visionary do you need to be to buy like 30,000 Bitcoin in like 2012? You have to be like, I don't know, God.
No, you have to be really future, you know, seeing, and you need to have great foresight to actually be able to recognize this kind of technology. Are there any women thought leaders that you also follow? Because we are all about promoting, you know, women on this particular podcast. And that is something I personally believe in as well, that there are a lot of women in this space who do not get their due. So could you tell us a little, you know, name a few female Argentinian thought leaders and, you know, our listeners?
Yeah, I follow a lot Florencia Ravena from Boon. I've never met her personally, but I mean, I love the work she does. She's so passionate about the crypto industry. She's so passionate about what she does. And at Moon, they are creating, I mean, they have already developed and always improving a great Bitcoin wallet. It's a very, very good technology. And they just do amazing things. And I love following her. And there are more, but that I have on my Twitter that I usually read. I don't have the names in my mind right now. And to be honest, I'm such I'm a fan of women at work. In our team we have no women yet in the core team. We have women to whom we outsource jobs, but like. Something that we want to have in our company is more women than men, because like so if any woman is listening to this podcast, please reach out to me, because we're actively looking for women to join our team from the development side, from the business development side, or literally anything, because again, we really believe that the change in the 21st century will become mostly from women. We believe that women in work are much better than men as well. I really believe that I personally don't have the eye and the details that any women can have. Like, if I am good at it, probably most of women will be much better at that. Part of our company culture, which we're still growing, so so we're still on time to yeah. fulfill that, is to really have more women than men, because again, we really think and we believe that on the 21st century, and especially in this industry that it's so innovative, the change will be led by women, and we yeah. want to make sure that all the women leaders are with us.
That those are wonderful thoughts, I think. You know, just the thought that you're thinking about hiring more women in the team, and you're thinking about gender balance, that is a very important conversation, I think, to be had in this space. Moreover, as you said, you know, there needs to be a balance if you're going to further this movement. It can't be a one-sided sort of a movement. Women need to be a part of it. And that's wonderful that now, you know, you have told our listeners that you're hiring. And I will actually, you know, put in your LinkedIn profile in the description as well, so that they can reach out to you directly and you can, you know, get more women on board. So
I will definitely will and yeah, again, like every person that knows me as well could yeah. tell you that every time I'm talking with a person, I tell them I'm desperately looking for a woman to join our team, like like really for every 10 people we have, we want to have 6 women and 4 men. We believe that is the way to the path to success in year 2019 and ahead.
That's wonderful to hear, absolutely. So this brings me to my last question, and this is a question that I ask everybody who's on this particular podcast. How would you suggest to our listeners that they can start living on blockchain?
I mean, everything is there already. So if I were you, a listener, I would buy Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Right.
I would just put those assets into decentralized lending or companies like Celsius and so on that provide interest on those assets,
right.
And just enjoy. I mean, that's the first part of the traditional banking services, which is like checking, storage, and interest. Then if you need remittances and so on, well, the assets are a remittance vehicle by itself, so you can directly send to whoever you need to send. Or if they don't know how to convert that, then there's tons of companies out there that provide remittances with crypto for much better rates than Western Union banks and so on. Like everyone should begin by buying Bitcoin and Ethereum. And as soon as you click buy, or as soon as you receive your first cryptocurrencies, then your life has been changed. Because
you've taken a step into the movement then.
100%. And like to every person I know and I love, I tell them, just buy, even if it's $100, just buy that in Bitcoin or Ethereum, and in 10 years you'll just invite me for 3 months holidays to wherever you want.
Right. Yeah, that is what you know. A lot of people don't know how to understand that they can buy a part of a Bitcoin as well. They seem to think that you have to buy a whole Bitcoin. So this is a good myth that we are busting here. This is wonderful. It has been absolutely wonderful talking to you. I am so impressed by your vision of, especially for the Latino market and the African markets, the emerging markets that you guys are trying to target. Do you have any last thoughts, Bora?
No, just tell everyone that enjoy the ride. This is super, super early stage for the technology, and there will be a lot of obstacles in the way, but this industry is great. Many of the best talent in the world is joining the blockchain and the crypto industry. So it'll only be growth from here. Just enjoy the ride. I mean, in 20 years, people that are 5 years old won't be able, I mean, they won't believe that we really used to use coins and traditional paper money, and that we used banks to do remittances, or we used services like these depredatory companies that charge like 20% to send money abroad and so on. People will say, like, why did you do that? So make sure that you can get on an early stage, so you become you change your financial and economic situation, like for the economy of the future. This is definitely, we are all building a new economic system together. There's a great stage to be part of it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking out the time to speak to me in the last 1 hour. I have had a wonderful time, and all the best for your platform. All the best for the vision. I hope you're able to hire more women, and it's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Bora.
Thank you, Tarusha. I hope you have a great time, and that the rest of the year smiles the most to you. And yeah, hope to do something together in the future.
Absolutely. I will be speaking to you about that once I stop the recording. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Bye-bye.
Bye.